Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my absolute pleasure to have as my guest, Sherry Dunleavy. Sherry Dunleavy is a former NBC news anchor who served the Wheeling, Virginia area for nearly 30 years, both on television and radio. Today, she is a best-selling author, inspirational speaker, and the founder of the Graduating Grief Academy and online support community, as well as host of the Graduating Grief podcast. Her number one best-selling book, How Can I Help?, was written to help people know exactly what to say and do when the people they love and care about are hurting. Sherry has found a way to graduate from the pain of losing a child and a high-profile career and is now sharing with others how they too can learn, grow, and expand their lives after tragedies, losses, and disappointments. As a self-proclaimed inspirationista, Sherry's passion lies in inspiring and encouraging women to step beyond the pain of their past so they can step fully into living with purpose, passion, and joy. And a woman close to my heart because I resonate with all of your objectives, your mission in terms of helping the bereaved and anybody else who's going through life transitions. So, Sherry, it's great to reconnect with you again. Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast.
It's my honor and my pleasure.
And I think we met through another grief educator and person who's done some marvelous work in the field, Ann Dubuque.
Right.
And Ann got all three of us together, and we kind of became, I call it like the three musketeers. We did a lot of collaborative projects together, particularly on Clubhouse. We had run a group for individuals who were grieving, and, you know, we tried to provide some tools, provide a safe space for dialogue. And then as life happens, other chapters in our lives came up. And, you know, we just ended up going our separate ways. But, you know, we always seem to circle back. And this is one of the times that we have. So it's just great to see you again.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm really honored to be here. And I'm thrilled because you've been a guest on my podcast. And now here, you know, these years later, you're podcasting yourself.
Yeah. And I never thought I would be in a position where I'd be doing this, but it was the persistence of two very, very intelligent students of mine and perceptive students of mine to really encourage me to do this. And I'm glad because I've been having some really, really interesting and really inspirational conversations with a lot of different people. Sherry, tell our listeners about the experiences or events that have shaped your life path and inspired what you do today.
Well, I think both of you and I both have this in common. We've both lost children. And I had a high-profile career in television news, was on a nice trajectory, and got married, had my first child, you know, just living the life as you dreamed it, right? You plan it and you dream it. And then I had my second child, Brandon, and we knew very early on, it was a high risk pregnancy, and we knew that the mortality rate was not in our favor. But we spent most of the pregnancy going to different children's hospitals on the East Coast, trying to come up with a game plan of how and what we could do to save our son's life once he was born. But you know, and as long as he was inside of me, I knew that I could protect him, but the minute he was born, all bets were off. And my son lived for 29 days. And in that 29 days, we never got to bring him home. I never got to hold him till he was dying. He had all of his senses dulled during his life because the condition that he had, any sensory, anything that was sensory that would activate his senses could send him into, you know, trauma and could kill him. So he didn't wear clothes. He had cotton in his ears. He had a cover over his eyes. It was just, and I couldn't even, you know, stroke him. I could only touch him on his hand because they didn't want to upset his senses. And so it was, you know, it was like a roller coaster ride. So there was the, you know, the high risk pregnancy and then the life, you know, the 29 days of living on this roller coaster, will he live or will he die? And then, you know, there was the all of a sudden I'm a grieving mom. And so that's the biggest thing that, you know, changed my life, because all of a sudden I realized, wow, life doesn't always go as you plan, and definitely life isn't fair. And so there's a lot of things that you wrestle with, you know, when you lose a child and you think, what did I do? Am I being punished? First of all, I think that's the first thing that you think of, you know, and so there's this process that you go through. And so I allowed it to take me on a journey, I guess. I allowed my grief to take me on a journey. And I realized that maybe, you know, so I had maternity leave and no baby. And so then I'm feeling guilty because I really shouldn't be off because I don't have a baby to be caring for. And so I went back to this very high profile career way too early, what I should have. And it just wasn't working for me. And I tried for a year, but I realized I need to be away from the public spotlight. But the funny thing was, Dave, I knew how to be Sherry, the TV personality. But if I left that, I would have to go home and be Sherry, the grieving mom. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to be that. And that scared me. And I couldn't do that right away. So really, it took about a year of self-reflection and therapy to say, this, you need to be home to heal. You need to be home to raise your other son. If you step away, you need to find out who you are. And so really, it was like self-discovery. So And it just really now is dawning on me. And I know this sounds silly because I know so much about grief, but I'm thinking I was also mourning and grieving the loss of a career and a dream that I had personally. So I lost my son. And then a year later, by choice, I left, you know, my career, but it was still something that I grieved. And in the midst of all of that, my husband and I lost three of our closest friends. And that's very common for people that are grieving too. There are people that will be there for you, and there are people who you think will be there for you, and they're just not. Mm-hmm. And there will be people that you really don't even know who show up and they become your angels. It's very strange situation. And the abandonment by the friends is actually what caused me later to write my book, How Can I Help? So I would think that the loss of my son and the collateral losses that came with it are the things that changed my life the most.
And I think sometimes what gets overlooked by individuals who are versed in grief or don't know enough about grief, it isn't just the physical loss of our loved ones. It's all those other associated losses, the symbolic losses, you know, the loss of career, you know, the loss of the future of our children and the loss of dreams.
They were friends that, like, one was my closest friend. And I thought when she called that she was going to say, I have a sitter, I'm on my way, don't worry, I'll be there. And instead, she said, I can't do this, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
And that is a loss. It's a significant loss.
Yes.
And a lot of times that tends to get overlooked. So I wanted to ask you, when you went back to your career, how much energy did it take for you to put on the public Sherry newscaster face or image? Did that take a lot of energy for you to maintain that?
Yes, it did. And I'm an introvert by nature. And so it's funny because I'm an introvert by nature around in the presence of people on radio, on television, with just the presence of a trusted camera crew or the people that are around you, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. I can talk about anything. I don't understand it. It's just the way it is. But I understand there are a lot of people like that. Johnny Carson was like that as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's it does take a lot of energy, but I had this ability to take the day's news and just tuck it somewhere back there where I could go home and live my life, right? Mm-hmm. But when Brandon died, all of a sudden it broke that dam, and then my pain and the world's pain were the same. I remember Brandon dying and going into the, or Brandon being alive, and that's when Columbine happened. And I went into the waiting room, and that's where everyone was watching about the shootings in Columbine. And mm-hmm. it was just like, oh my God, this is too much for me. And so that's why I say my career no longer worked for me, because I was able to compartmentalize and go and do my job. Mm-hmm. But what started happening was couldn't compartmentalize anymore. I lost that ability. And so there would be stories where I literally would start crying. I couldn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, or I would go through my scripts ahead of time and see which scripts might trigger me. And I'd say, I can't read this tonight. And so that's what I mean by the career wasn't working for me anymore, because I did not, I lost the ability to be able to do my job in that way.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, you're an empath, and with the loss of Brandon, that just had to really just make you raw emotionally, and that just opened you up to the emotions and turmoil that everybody else was feeling. And you're right, as a newscaster, you have to be able to kind of compartmentalize that. You need to be able to put that to the side, and just basically report the news, do your job, and make sure everything else is taken care of.
That's why I really honestly refer to myself as a recovering news anchor, because I realized that all along it had, even though I had been able to compartmentalize, it still lived with me. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very challenging I just recently during COVID was the first time in probably 5 years, I had just stopped watching all the news altogether. Mm-hmm. Because it was too much. And then once the pandemic happened, I would allow myself one newscast a day. See, that's the problem, Dave. When I got into news back in the 80s, I mean, it really was, you know, you watched the news at 6 and 11, right? 6 and 11 on the East Coast. And then they started adding a 5 and a 5:30 and a, you know, a 10 o'clock news. And then there's CNN and Fox, and it's 24 cycle news. And this is why we're in the predicament that we're in, is because we're taking in this constantly. We're eating a constant diet of this, and we weren't supposed to. The whole idea of 24-hour news was supposed to be news when you can get it, because mm-hmm. of everybody's different work shifts and everything. Mm-hmm. But then it became into a machine and a business, mm-hmm. where they try to keep you there as long as possible. Yeah. And that's what social media does now too. And we have to be very protective of ourselves, our psyche and our souls, for our mental well-being and our spiritual well-being. And so that's why I can't eat that, because I can't consume that. See, because we're more than what we consume, you know, what we put into our bodies, it's what we put into our minds.
Yeah, for me, as you were talking about, you know, the advent of 24-hour news and how that's manifested now, I was right with you. Back in my day, it was like the news was 6 and 11. You'd have game shows, soap operas, and the news would just get reported. Now it's just 24 hours of endless coverage, different contributors coming on, giving their perception, which may be different from the contributor before, which just lends to, I think, to me, just a lot of confused individuals in terms of what do I believe. And the second thing, when you look at the misinformation campaigns on social media, coupled with what's going on with the news, this is going to cause more confusion and, in my mind, more polarization. And if you're a grieving individual, that just drains you. It just drains you, because particularly in early grief, you don't have the energy. We don't have the energy to attend to our daily tasks. We're trying to make sense out of our worlds. We're trying to figure out why the relationships we had before are no longer manifesting, and why are other individuals coming to the forefront that we never thought would come to the forefront. It's all of these changes and the information overload that just really overwhelms individuals who are grieving cognitively, physically, emotionally, even psychologically.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's stay away.
Yeah.
You know, like, you will find out what's going on. Believe me. Believe me.
I have my news apps. I turn notifications off on my phone.
Oh.
And I check my news apps when I want to. I try to be in control of that.
Yeah.
Because I know I can watch the news there someday. Sure, I can watch it for 5 minutes. And if I'm having a really emotional day, I feel like taking my sneaker and throwing it right through the flat screen TV.
Right.
So I have to, for me, even 21 years removed as a parent who's experienced the transition of a child, I still am very protective of my energy when it comes to external news programs or any other information that I need to be mindful of.
As am I. So, yeah. And I advise that for anyone. Stay away. And, you know, and it's not to condemn the news, but it's not supposed to be your appetizer, your main course, your dessert, you know, and your snack.
No. And it's also empowering ourselves to take what we need to take from it and just leave the rest. In early stages of grief, it's very difficult to empower ourselves because we feel disempowered by the loss and by the circumstances and by the changes that we have to negotiate. You mentioned your book earlier. How Can I Help? Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write it. I know you alluded to it earlier, but go into a little more detail about what inspired you to write it.
Okay. So I told you that my husband and I lost three of our closest friends, which compounded the feelings of loss, right? But in no way mistake that the fact that we were not lifted up and loved through this. We were. But that was devastating for us. So fast forward 6 years, we have moved to a new state, really just tried to redirect our life, tried to get it moved into a neighborhood with a lot of children so that our son could grow up with other children, because I was aging out of being a parent, you know, as far as getting pregnant. And the phone rang, and it was this person who 6 years earlier said, I just can't do this. And she had tracked me down, and she just said, you've been on my mind. I've been thinking about you. What's going on? What's up? And no mention of my son dying, of my grief, anything. It was just like, well, let's skip that, and let's just get on to all the other stuff. And I'm thinking in my head, this is the strangest call. I'm thinking, we don't get to do this. We just don't get to do this now. And so I always say, I'm so glad that When I left that phone call, I could have been, you know, instead of being filled with anger, I was filled with curiosity. What's that about? What is that about? Like, how could someone literally just pick up and act like this didn't even happen, right? And it's just so then I thought, how is it that people abandon people? Like, you say you're good friends with someone. You stood up for them at their wedding. I mean, you were there in their best of time. So at a time when, without really any explanation at all, then when they needed you the most, why would you not show up? And I chewed on that for a long time. And I kept thinking, I came up with three reasons. And one was because it was too painful for them to face, that it was, you know, I was in childbearing age. She was at childbearing age. The worst thing that you can think of is losing a child. And now you actually know someone who did. And it's real. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't think that could be real. And so it might scare the heck out of you, or it might scare the heck out of you to see someone that you love and care about in the throes of grief, because you've never experienced that in your life before. So that is reason one. It hits too close to home. The second reason is that, you know, they don't know what to say or do. You know, maybe they've never had a loss. Maybe it's never been modeled. Maybe their parents haven't modeled anything. It's just, they don't know. They don't know. And the third thing, which I think is the most common thing for most people, is that they don't want to screw it up. So they'd rather do nothing at all than say something they think is going to make you cry more, or make you upset, or make you angry, or unsettled. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just leave you be. You know, so those were the three things I'm thinking about. So then the next thought was, gosh, if there was just something out there that could help people, I wonder if there's anything out there. And so I would go into bookstores, I would go Google, you know, I'd go into on Amazon, and I was looking for this resource. And this voice just kept coming back to me saying, Sherry, if you're not going to find what you're looking for until you write it. And I would say, here's where, you know, between something that's a good idea and a calling, is a calling doesn't stop. Because I kept saying, you're crazy. No way. I'm not doing this. Like, I write new scripts, but I don't write books, you know. But it just kept calling me. And so I thought, well, how am I going to do this? Like, I'm not an expert. I'm just a mom who lost a child. You know, I know what I would want and how I would want people to help me. But, you know, like, what is the proper thing? I really don't know. I can't call myself an expert. I'm not an expert. I thought, but, you know, a lot of people that have gone through this. And so what I did was I put out a call on social media and said, I need to, I'm writing a book, Scariest Thing You Ever Said. Public declaration, which kind of makes you have to do it. You know, I'm writing a book, and I want to talk to people who have dealt with loss. And if I interview you and send you a questionnaire, would you fill it out for me? And so I talk to people who physically lost loved ones due to death, but I also talk to people who went through divorces, who've had diagnosis, who've lost their jobs, you know, all different kinds of losses. And I basically wanted to know, what did your friends and family do to help you through this? I want specifics. Share with me. What exactly did they do? What did you find most helpful? What was really unique that surprised you, that you went, wow, I really like that, or wow, that helped me a lot? And then, what was not so helpful? I don't want to say right and wrong, you know, because I happen to believe that even if you step out awkwardly, it's better than not stepping out at all. Now, a message to all those who are grieving. Our brain wants a reason. We want someone or something to blame. And all it takes is someone to say something just a little bit off, and it can set us off. And we can vilify them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm asking you to extend grace to anyone who has stepped up to you, and maybe they have said something that was so stupid, so ludicrous, but was that their intent? Can you look at their heart and can you see what their intent was? Was their intent there to really anger you? Or was it there thinking that they wanted to say something to make you feel better and you took it the wrong way? So that's a message that I want to leave for the grievers. But I do want to say that even if you show up and do things awkwardly, in my estimation, it's better than not showing up at all. And so that's why I don't say right and wrong. I say helpful, not so helpful. And
think, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and I just compiled all their answers, parts of their story, because I wanted to hear their grief story, you know, and their answers, their stories. I intertwined them into the book. And then I also, at the end of each chapter, would just give lists and leave notes, leave room for notes. And so the idea is that, you know, oh, your best friend got divorced. You don't know what to do. You know, here's what you can do. You're the person in the cubicle next to you, their husband just dropped dead of a heart attack. You don't know what to do to help that person. You can go to the chapter and you can find something in there, even the smallest of thing that you can do that will let that person know that you care about them, that you acknowledge the pain that they're going through and that you care about them. My intention of writing this book is just to say, you know, it's called How Can I Help? Your go-to guide for helping loved ones through life's difficulties. We all have gifts, talents, and abilities, and we can all help in some manner. And people need us most when they're at their weakest point.
Exactly. And one of the things I really liked about your book was just not the practical strategies, the advice in terms of what helps and what doesn't help, but the fact that you covered all kinds of losses. It just wasn't loss related to death. There were other significant life transitions, such as divorce, terminal illness. So you covered the gamut, which I thought was really, really a good tool, because it isn't just about being effective companions or helpers, individuals who are grieving physical losses. It's about any type of grief and about any type of life transition. How can we be present? How can we be supportive? So I really like the fact that you covered everything and that you got the input from a variety of different people. It was really, the book was a community effort. And it also, I think, mirrored your own history in terms of the losses that you've experienced.
Yes. So thank you. I appreciate that. I wanted to help as many people as possible because, you know, the funny thing was, is that as I was talking about this, you know, through the years to people, I'm realizing I wasn't the only one. You think that you're the only one a lot of times. And I realized I wasn't the only one. And I was also realized that no one was talking about this. Mm-hmm. And as I was going out and talking to groups, I mean, I would literally be, when I give this talk, I'm at the back of the room for at least a half an hour to 45 minutes every single time. People telling me of something that happened to them or confessing that they were that person that never reached out to someone and how bad they felt, you know? And so I always say it's never too late to say, I didn't know what I didn't know. And I'm sorry I wasn't there to support you, but I will be there from now on. You know, like I just feel like it's never too late. And you'll be different next time. When you know better, you do better. That's what Maya Angelou says, right?
That's right. And for me, it's like with my own challenges with the transition of my daughter, Janine, I became more mindful of what I said to other individuals who were grieving and yes. Other individuals in general.
Right.
I said, how do I want to come across? What do I want to say? How do I want to say it? What words could be a specific trigger, that unintentional trigger? How can I be best present based on the situation that I'm dealing with? And I think if we can teach everybody down the road to be mindful of how they can be best present given the circumstances mm-hmm. and be proactive, we'd have an extensive worldwide community of just tremendous support. The other thing is, you're absolutely right. A lot of times we think we're alone. We're the only ones that have experienced this. And when I thought I was alone in my grief after after my daughter's transition. I went to a bereaved parent support group 6 months after she had transitioned. I saw 17 or 18 other parents there. And I realized then that I wasn't alone. I said it sucked that I'm not alone, but I'm glad I wasn't alone because I had somebody who could share and who could understand my pain and provide a community of support to help me work through that.
Right. I always said, I felt like I was initiated into this group that I never, ever would have applied to be a member. But thank God there were other members in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt the same way. You know, I always thought that, you know, if I lived a great life and, you know, just was good to people and animals, God would take care of me. The universe would take care of me.
Me too.
And then the unthinkable happened. And then I had to, I started going through the what ifs and, you know, life isn't fair. But I realized that we're going to get challenges throughout this lifetime, Sherry.
And we are.
The measure of our life is the quality of our life is how well we transcend challenge and what we do to find meaning in service to others as a result of that. That is the true measure of the quality of our life. We're all going to go through challenges. It's just a matter of how we respond to them.
I think that it was almost like at first you feel like the spoiled child that's kicking and screaming. And if I can't have them back, then I don't want anything, you know? And I just thought, I don't want to be stuck there. And, you know, and I don't know if I ever told you this or not, but when I was a reporter, there was a woman that covered a flash flood before I was married, before I had children. And there was a mother who kept showing up at Command Central. And I found out that her daughter and another girl got swept away in a bathtub. And the one girl was found, but her daughter was missing. And then the search went from rescue to recovery, right? And so I would watch her, you know, just kept checking the sheets every day. And they finally found her daughter's body. And she trusted me enough to interview her. And she was getting help. And I followed her, you know, for a while. And we struck up, I don't want to say like a nice trust, maybe friendship. This is before social media. So I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, I'm reading the news, our scripts, and it was the mother's body. My friend Janet, her body was found at the place where they pulled her daughter's body out of the river, and she killed herself. I mean, you know, took her life. And as soon as Brandon died, I thought, I cannot be her. I will not be her. I cannot let this. And so it's funny because the way you live your life and the way you move through your grief does make an impact, either positive or negative. So she kind of saved my life, you know what I mean? Like, because I did not want to end up like she did. So I think about her a lot. And I wish that I knew what I know now, that maybe someone could have helped her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's sometimes when we take a look at those other tragedies that kind of jolts us awake, and that can be a catalyst for us, really just reestablishing our own life with meaning again. And
yes,
it saddened that it was somebody that died by suicide that was that catalyst, but you know, at the same time, it was something that you needed to witness. It was something that inspired you to say, I don't want to be there. Once we get through the fog and the shock and the initial numbness, we have a choice in terms of how we orchestrate the rest of our life. We can either move through grief or we can stay stuck in the muck of grief.
Right.
The choice is ours.
It is ours. And I think that angers a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
It does. And, but that's okay. But it is truth. That is absolute truth. And there is a time where you have to make a choice. So, you know, and then you grow, right? Mm-hmm. You grow through this. You learn through this. You evolve, like you emerge, a new you emerges, right? And mm-hmm. and that's what the intent of my book was, is that I want to salvage relationships. I want to keep relationships strong, because we need strong relationships in order to move through something like this. You need to do a lot of the work yourself, but to know that you had that strong support system is very important.
Well, the idea of grief work isn't something that's just inherent to the 20th or 21st century. It is, Sigmund Freud talked about the importance of doing grief work in his own teachings. And so that goes back to the days of Freud, and we do literally need to do the work of grief, which mm-hmm. is making a decision about what kind of a world do we want to live in now that our loved ones are no longer physically a part of that? And how do we want to live in a world where other associated losses have occurred that have rocked our understanding of the world as we know it? How do we choose to live through that and, you know, make a difference in spite of it?
Right. So that's what that's what I've just tried to do. I feel like I've called to this. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I'm okay with it, because people say, I don't know how you do that, but it's not. When you can help move someone through grief, you can give them an aha. You can give them a sense of hope and encouragement. That's exciting to me.
It is. And that kind of is a nice segue into the next thing I wanted to ask you about, was graduating Grief Academy that you've uh-huh. established. What does it mean to graduate grief in your terms, and what tools do you give people to plant the seeds to allow them to do that?
When I came up with the idea of graduating grief, there was two things that came to my mind. The first one is actually when I was in a support group, after about a year and a 18 months, maybe 18 months, I told my husband, I don't want to go back anymore. And he said, why? And I said, because I'm feeling better when I walk in than after I walk out. I said, I feel like I'm being forced to be sad again, and I don't want to be sad. I'm ready to graduate into my life. So that was the first thing. But then you look at the word graduation, right? Gradual. And so I see someone very dark, you know, in the fetal position on the floor, and then maybe they sit up, and then maybe they feel a little lighter, and then they can get on their knees, and maybe then they can stand, and maybe then they can start walking. And so grief is like this progression from being totally down to starting to emerge again, and also the darkness to light, you know. So there's just so many different meanings to that, but I want people to know that it's possible. And I, in my podcast, I want to introduce people to real people who have done this. I'm not just saying this, I'm living it. And I know people who are doing this. And then, you know, and then what tools are they using and how are they doing it? So I studied, so I just have like a video series for people in acute grief, because I don't work with people in that acute pain. That's not where I am. I want to help those people that are saying, I'm ready to graduate into my life now. You know, but I want to give the people who are in that darkness the hope that it's possible. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
And we do. It's about helping those individuals who want to rise from the ashes. Mm-hmm. And it's also planting seeds with those individuals who are stuck.
Right.
And giving them and empowering them to do what they need to do with those seeds that are planted.
Right.
And hopefully something happens that will give them a reason to move forward through their grief, give them a reason to live through their grief. So.
Right. And even to look at the gifts, you know, and mm-hmm. who belongs and who doesn't belong anymore as you move forward, and what belongs and what doesn't. What do you want to leave behind?
That's right.
What do you want to create that's new? It's almost like you, I don't want to say, you get a kind of do-over. You get to make some choices now about how you want to live your life and in which way you want to move it. And that can be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It can be scary. So I think you have to help people deal with fear, deal with guilt, you know, deal with healthy boundaries. Deal with, you know, not just the pain and sadness, right? How do I want to create a life that's going to work for me as I move forward? You know, and so that's like, so, you know, I have a freshman level, sophomore level, junior level, senior level is like, so junior level is like my transformation journey. How do I transform my life mm-hmm. into meaning? And then, you know, the senior level is journey to joy. Oh, I find joy again. And allow myself to feel this joy. So, you know, I do a workshop called Compass Word Workshop, where you select a word and how you're going to incorporate it into your life in four different segments. And my word this year is and, because in grief, a lot of times we want either or. And what we're stuck with is the and. I'm living in pain and I can live in joy mm-hmm. and they both can live in the same space. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have dark moments and light, but that's life. Life is, and we're living life in the end.
Yeah. And lightness and darkness are forever going to be a part of us anyway. That's
right.
You know, grief is a microcosm of what life is like anyway. There's a lot of happy right. moments, but it's not all happy.
Right.
But we can learn from the sadness. We can learn from our angry moments. We can learn from our confused moments. Everything has something to teach us.
Yeah.
Everything is in service to us, including those emotions that individuals say, well, it's, you really don't want to express those emotions because it's going to get in the way of your happiness. Well, that's a setup.
Yeah.
I mean, we are emotional feeling beings.
Right.
And that's also part of the spiritual growth and awareness is feeling those emotions and doing that work that's not necessarily pretty because of the emotional content that's attached to it. So,
yeah, I think we have to learn how to feel the emotions, but feel through the emotion. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's they call it waves of grief for a reason, because mm-hmm. waves wash over you and then they go out. Another one will come. But the hope is that, you know, one that took you out, maybe you're a little stronger now. And even if it does take you down, you can pop up a lot faster.
Absolutely. So, Sherry, as we're getting to the wrapping up portion of our podcast, give our listeners and our viewers one or two takeaways from your experiences that you'd like to leave with them that can help them navigate life challenges.
Know that it's possible. Know that it's possible to live a good life regardless of what in a living and loving your life after loss. That's what, you know, I'm all about. Finding purpose, living with passion and joy. It's all possible. It might not feel possible at first, but I want to give people that hope that it is possible. And like we said earlier, Dave, you have to choose it. And once you choose it, you know, like there will be people there to help you through it, but you have to choose it for yourself. But it is possible. And I believe that you can graduate from the pain of your grief and live your life with purpose, passion, and joy. I know it because I'm living proof, you're living proof, and there are so many others. And that's what I want people to know, because, you know, my life didn't end when my son's life ended. So I still have a lot of life to live, and so does everybody else. And if we let our grief hold us prisoner, then we're not just cheating ourselves, but we're cheating the rest of the world. And I think that it's our duty and our obligation to be creatures of service. And so by you not choosing to live, fully live, really is a disservice to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. And because we we're losing the opportunity to learn from somebody who,
maybe
who have some special talents and some special skills that could help us get through. We're being deprived of that.
Right. And we're not seeing that person, that circumstance that could be our greatest teacher.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for that. Those are two very wise takeaways that I know will resonate with the audience. So lastly, how can people contact you? How can people find out about what you have going on, contract for your services, and also how they can purchase your book?
Well, you can go to Amazon and purchase my book, or go to sherrydunlevy.com to purchase my book. If you have a group that would like to talk about how can I help, that's a great presentation that I do. I absolutely love that presentation. It's so powerful and it's so helpful, and it equips people immediately to go out and help. I always say, don't step back in fear, always step out in love. And that always helps you. So sherrydunlevy.com. If you want to hear podcasts, it's the Graduating Grief podcast and blogs. You're a guest blogger on graduatinggrief.com, which is just grief resources. Anything that you need grief related, you can find it there, and it's all free.
You can't beat that. And given the quality of Sherry's work and the fact that I've known her for so many, she does great work. She's got quality resources, and you will benefit from those resources and also her book. So I would encourage you to avail yourself of both. So with that, Sherry, thank you so much for being on the Teaching Journeys podcast today. It was like we had a clubhouse meeting.
I know. I miss it. I miss it, and I miss you, my friend.
I miss you too, Sherry. We can't wait 2 years to do this again.
No. So.
Anyway, with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.